Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Dom Alessio, and this is Other Side of the Tracks. Each episode, we feature a new release and talk to the artist about the inspiration, meaning, and stories behind each song. In this episode, we take a look at Wildness, the seventh studio album by Snow Patrol. Since breaking into the mainstream in 2003, this is their first new music in 7 years. Wildness taps into something raw and primitive, and as lead singer and songwriter Gary Lightbody explained, the extended break from Snow Patrol proved to be a source of inspiration. Writing songs that weren't pulled directly from his own psyche helped Lightbody get over what he considered to be not so much writer's block, but a life block. Here's Wildness by Snow Patrol.
Started writing Wildness in 2013, and we finished it approaching the end of 2017. And if I could take the listener to anywhere on earth to listen to it, it would be the beach in Croppersburn, County Down, Northern Ireland. It's a beach that I would go to as a kid. Life on Earth, the very first song on the album, there's a line that says, "Just the ships at anchor, me and you." Just a ship's anchor, me and you. Belfast Lough is that stretch of water, and I always wondered about those ships sitting out there. They'd be sitting out there for days. Just so close to land, but not close enough to get on it. That's the place I think of. I think just being where you are is the best kind of place to start a record. Obviously, that comes with its own problems, because really you are just, you know, you're not even going in with your gun belt. You're going in completely naked, and then you got to deal with your own madness, and that's all you got to work with. And that's what I had to work through on this record before I got anywhere, is the battles that were going on inside my own brain. There was no plan to make the record. There was a plan to get better. There was a plan to get healthier. There was a plan to get happier. And the record got made running sometimes parallel to that, and sometimes completely in line, completely in the same groove as that. But for the most part, tantalizingly parallel, unfortunately. Just almost close enough to reach, but always just arm's length. The first track on the album is Life on Earth. This is the song that took the longest to write, the longest to... I started writing that in 2013 and finished it the day we finished recording. So it took almost 5 years, and it felt like it took 50 years, to be honest, in a lot of ways. It broke me into tiny pieces and then put me back together again. At times I felt like I'd never write another song, that I would never get through this song, that this song would be the last song that I ever tried to write and didn't, and then I would have to walk away from everything. And so to finish it was the greatest feeling I've ever had in music. Don't give in. Don't Give In, and an almost great sort of counterbalance to Life on Earth, took the least amount of time to make. It was the song that came along to kind of tease me in a way, because it took. Myself and Garrett wrote it, and Jack Knife Lee wrote it in such a short time that I thought, well, this was 2014. I thought, well, I mean, all the rest of the album's going to fall into place very easily now. There's not going to be any problems. And I was very wrong. It also became a kind of a talisman, became a kind of a beacon that it was possible. That it was possible to write a song, it was possible still to finish a song, it was possible to make something that I was proud of, make something that I loved. And, you know, it kept, you know, for so long, you know, playing something, friends would go, oh, have you got some new songs? And, you know, the only song I would have would to play them would be Don't Give In. So it became a song that I used as kind of like, oh, you see, I can still do this. You know, it was an important song, very important song for the record, because it actually kind of kept that feeling of achievement in the room when so much was unachieved at that time. With the vocal on Don't Give In, I'm sorry to disappoint people, but I had the flu. I had every intention of re-singing it, and because I didn't think it was good enough. I had the flu, so why the hell would I keep that on the record? I was re-singing it in the studio with Garrett, and Garrett's two daughters, Betsy and Esme, are Johnny McDade and myself are co-godparents to those girls. And Esme, the younger daughter, came into the room while I was re-recording it, and she literally went, what are you doing? And I was like in the middle of a take, and I'm like, Esme. And she's like, do not re-record this song. And I was like, well, it's not good enough. And she's like, no, it is. It's perfect. You got to keep it the way it is, or I'll never speak to you again. Heal Me is a song about someone that helped to, you know, save me in a lot of different ways. Saved me mentally, saved me health-wise, finally kicked drinking and drugs and all the things that I was doing that were not helping me in any way. So I just wanted to write and dedicate a song to the person that helped me the most and through that, and she's amazing. Empress, which is the fourth track, is inspired by my goddaughters, Betsy and Esme. I've known them since they were born, or I've known Esme since she was born, Betsy was two, and now they're teenagers. They care about the world, they give a damn about what's happening in it. They see the whole world, you know, in a way that I couldn't possibly when I was young, because I grew up in Northern Ireland, and Northern Ireland was an extraordinarily closed community at that time. It is no longer. It's a wonderful place to live. I do live there, and it's an extraordinary place full of hope and joy and music and great art. But at the time, Northern Ireland, all we heard on the news was Northern Irish news. There was no world news because we had enough news to go around for ourselves. And so it was a very kind of closed off kind of, even though we were kind of in the out on our own in a lot of ways in there. But Ireland, Republic of Ireland always felt like part of Europe. But we never really felt like part of Europe when I was growing up. You know, I didn't feel that sort of connection to the wider world or the wider continent even. So I sort of reimagined my teenage years through the eyes of my goddaughters who do see the world. You know, I was trying to imagine what it'd be like to see the world at that age and have that sort of affection and connection. Dark's Witch was something that I'd been, Garrett and I had been kicking around for a long time as well, and that kind of chopped up acoustic guitar and the rhythm, you know, those sort of dance-ish or electronic rhythms are things that, you know, I mean, Garrett was an electronic DJ, so was I, for 15 years or so, and, you know, so that music is in our blood. But it's perhaps not associated so much with Snow Patrol. But we still wanted it to sound, you know, to have those natural sounds in it. The acoustic has an innate and inbuilt rhythmic quality to it that the electric doesn't have. There's a percussive element to the acoustic guitar, which is especially evident in a song like A Dark Switch. A lot of this record is about having your mind opened to new things. And that dark switch I'm talking about isn't necessarily dark as in mysterious, but like dark as in inaccessible, dark as in you not realize that these emotions, this new way of life, this new way of living, this new way of seeing the world is actually available to you at all until somebody actually puts their hand on the switch for you and goes, no, you don't have to live like this. You don't have to live in fear. You don't have to live in pain.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What If This Is All The Love You Ever Get is a song that went through a lot of different iterations. We did a full band version that was kind of had some electronic elements. We'd done a band version that was maybe more rock kind of version. We've done sort of various things. But then the version that made the most sense, the version that seemed to have the most impact, and I'm not talking to anyone else, you know, we tend to try and make as many decisions on our own without actually asking other people's opinions, because once you start going out to friends and family members, then you've got too many opinions to deal with. So just the piano and the vocal. We tried that and it just sounded perfect. And it also, for the people that are listening, and I realize that it is less people these days, but there are still people that listen to albums as a whole. And for those people listening to the album, you've got five very expansive, big tracks, and then the album just sort of shrinks in quiet on itself into this very, very still place that, you know, is you know, it's that was deliberate. You know, we wanted people to sort of go, oh, right, okay, now we don't quite, we didn't quite know where you're going with Dark Switch, and now we don't know where you're going with the record. I think that track listing, track sequencing is really important still, even in these days. What If This Is All Love is a song really that everything is said in the title of the song. You know, I mean, it's what are you gonna let this slip through your fingers? And at the times that we do let these things slip through our fingers, then that's the time. You know, the chorus is like, I've been here, I've been in the ruins, I know the wreckage, I come over, come talk to me. You know, I think we sometimes it's more natural to sit on our own, sit with these feelings, and, you know, either try and avoid them by drink, drugs, TV, social media, whatever addiction we have, what we don't do is talk about them. And what's so important is that we do. That's what changed my life anyway. I guess it was written about a couple of friends that have been going through, or inspired, I guess, by a couple of friends that have been going through divorces, and I wanted to let them know that I was there for them.
What if it hurts like hell? Then it'll hurt like hell. Come on over here. I'm in the ruins too. I know the wreckage so well. Come on over here.
There was a lot of books of lyrics for this album. Obviously, it was nearly 5 years in the making, so I got to make sure I incinerate all those books because they're really bad lyrics. But, you know, you get through a lot of crap to get to the good stuff, and I do anyway. There are lyricists, I'm sure, that write great lyrics immediately, but takes me a while of some editing. I wrote the line of Youth Written in Fire in a different... I was working on a different song, and a Youth Written in Fire, and then I just drew like a box around it. Like, I kind of went like a bit Beautiful Mind, and I was just drawing a box around the title. And then we're in the studio and we were listening to what became A Youth Written in Fire just over and over again, and I wasn't really getting anywhere. And Garrett went, okay, it was me, Garrett, and Nathan in the studio, and he went, let's have a music break, which he'll do often at times when we're not getting anywhere. And he put on Nick Cave's most recent album, and the first track on it is Jesus Alone. He put that on, and I hadn't heard it at this point yet, and it just shook me immediately. I mean, I since learned as I listened that what the song was about, and you know, it's an extraordinary heartbreaking thing to write a song about, that type of loss. But the song itself, as well as the lyrics, are this extraordinarily intense kind of rumbling bass, and it just felt like there was something that was being vibrated, that there was like my body kind of became a kind of a tuning fork, that it was just, there was something going to shift, there was something going to move. And we listened to that song 10 times in a row, and after the 10th time, Garrett saw something shift in me, as he does sometimes, it's good that way, and went, me and Nathan are going to go and grab some food, and we'll come back in half an hour. And he came back in half an hour, and I'd written the whole song. And I'd taken that line, A Youth Written in Fire, from a previous page, and I'd written it at the top of the page just before they left, and then everything that my whole life as a drink enthusiast kind of came out on the page. And you know, my alcoholism and subsequent recovery kind of was condensed into that song, and it's it means a lot to me, that song. Soon was the only song that I've written the lyrics to first, ever, actually. Snow Patrol will be going for 25 years next year, and that's the only song I've ever written the lyrics first. I tend to wait with the lyrics to find out how I'm going to feel when I actually record the song, because I might feel differently. Because now that I know that it might be 5 years between writing the melody and writing the lyrics, it's a good bet that things will have shifted. But with that, my dad had been diagnosed with dementia, and he'd been exhibiting signs that, you know, he was going down that road, maybe sort of 18 months before that. And I was writing poetry at the time a lot. That's why I started writing. Seamus Heaney is one of my sort of most biggest inspirations. And when I was 15, I was introduced to him by an amazing English teacher, Mark McKee. And I started writing poetry almost immediately. And I was published when I was 15 and 16 in various sort of anthologies. Don't look for that poetry, it's terrible. But that's where I started, you know. But then once I started writing songs, that kind of shifted. The music always came first, you know. Not sure why. The lyrics kind of came second from that point onwards, but they always did. It sounds like they come second because they're less of importance, but I think they come second because they actually have more importance, because I want to think about them longer than I want to think about the melody. The melody should always be instinctive, and the lyrics should always be, you know, thoughtful. I started writing about my dad, and I guess sort of trying to join us together as best I can, as best I could. First of all, you know, both our memories are not good. I've always had a terrible, terrible memory. I can't remember my own song lyrics. I've never been able to. I've always had to have cheat sheets, you know, or I forget. So there's that kind of memory connection. And then there's not a chorus, there's an A section and a B section in that song. And the B section, I put us back to when he was the lion that he was, and I was the cub, the little boy holding on to his thumb. So it's a song about trying to burn something into the palace of someone's mind, something that can never be forgotten. Wild Horses is—it's a song that the verse and the pre-chorus we had for a long time. We knew that there was building to something, and we couldn't quite get to where it was building to. We struggled with that for such a long time, and we finally—it was Garrett that put some chords down, and he went, okay, well, it needs to do this, and he figured it out, as he always does. He's a genius that way, like building a song. He found this way to kind of make the song explode in the chorus, and it's one of the biggest, vital, robust choruses on the record.
Everything is certain, everything is is suddenly alive.
Life and Death, which is the last song on the record, it started with a Cannes sample, and a great German krautrock band, and Garrett and I kind of, I just wrote a few chords over the top of it, and then I'd sung the first verse off the cuff. Those lyrics were I made up as I was singing it, the first verse, and because they don't, I mean, they I don't know if they mean whatever they mean. They don't mean anything, but in some ways, but then I tried to rewrite the verse, and I never came up with better lyrics, even though I don't quite understand the lyrics that came out of me that day. I never was able to better it, and I also wasn't able to better the vocal performance, even though the vocal performance isn't correct either. There's a few notes that are slightly missed, and yet it has that fragility in it that just sounds really perfect to kind of start the last song of the record, that there's still fragility, there's still perhaps slight uncertainty, there's still something in me that is still maybe a little broken, and yet there's so much joy, there's so much hope, there's so much less fear that is in the record. But there is this sort of dichotomy between the two things. You want the tiger. The last lines, you know, I don't want to be so far from you, you know. It's like, I couldn't have planned the end of the record better, even though we didn't plan. As I say, we don't have a plan, we don't have a blueprint. That song, as soon as we finished the first version of it, I was like, this is the last song on the record. It just... And the first song on the album's called Life on Earth, and the last song on the album's called Life and Death. And it had nothing to do with the titles. That was just always going to be the first song, and it was always going to be the last song, whatever the hell they were called. I wouldn't have planned that they would both be called those things, to be honest, because it's maybe a little too neat and tidy. But sonically, they deserve to be where they are. And, you know, I think as well, when you've got a song as strong as Life and Death at the end of a record, it shows that it's how much you believe in the album. Because, you know, I don't know, these days where people might be worried that people aren't going to get the whole way to the end of the album. But I've read some, I tend not to read too much on Twitter, but I have read some things on Twitter of people saying that it's their favorite song. And that's, you know, it's getting to the end of a record and finding your favorite song on it is a beautiful thing. And it means a lot to us that's happening. After this album was finished, the first thing that I did was move back to Northern Ireland and moved into a house overlooking that beach that this album features a lot, you know, the imagery. So, yeah, the first thing I wanted to do when we finished the record was to go home, be amongst the people that, you know, I love the deepest, and be in the country that I love the most, you know. So it's, you know, it's a very important place for me.
Wildness by Snow Patrol is available now. To find out more, visit snowpatrol.com. Other Side of the Tracks is produced in Sydney, Australia by U Music Media House, a subsidiary of Universal Music Australia. This episode was edited and mixed by the teams at Eardrum and Forbes Street Studios. For more, visit othersideofthetrackspod.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.